the postal service, these so-called financial problems will not only be solved, but the public will get better postal service. And what we're talking about in terms of improving and expanding postal service is with such things as postal banking. We used to have postal banking in this country from 1911 to 1967, and people had postal savings accounts, and they could do that again. There was, I don't know, 38% of zip codes have no bank. Many Americans are unbanked and have to use predatory check cashing and payday loan outfits for their banking, and which costs exorbitant fees. So postal banking, but also completely replacing the postal vehicle fleet with electric vehicles, and putting in charging stations at every one of the 37,000 postal facilities, which could also be used by the public. Wi-Fi hotspots, one-stop government services where people could get, you know, apply for Social Security or...
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Do you miss going to the theater? Looking for some drama? Then tune in for The Strange Case of Nick M., an all-new radio play by Imago Theater on Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. Listeners will be taken on Imago's trippy audio journey into a fragmentary world, narrated by a cocky podcaster who has unearthed a box of long-forgotten reel-to-reel tapes. So tune in on Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. and get ready for a very special premiere of Imago's The Strange Case of Nick M. right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Jihad Abdul-Mumit and Hal Engel. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Thank you, Adam.
Right on. Thanks so much for being on the show. Can you all just give a brief introduction as to what you guys are working on currently?
My name is Jihad Abdul-Mumit, and I am the chairperson of the National Jericho Movement. I live in Richmond, Virginia, married, three children. And my daytime job, I guess I'm a community case manager that goes into prisons and jails to do HIV testing and case management for individuals that are HIV positive. And we're currently working on, which we'll talk about more, as an international tribunal scheduled for October this year, 2021. We'll talk about those issues perhaps later on in the show.
And my name is Hal Engel. I'm a retired attorney. I'm working on the International Tribunal with Jihad, and I'm also helping two other persons in prison. One of them is Russell Maroon Schultz, and the other is Dominic Newsom.
Great. Well, thanks so much for all the amazing work that you guys are doing and pushing this forward with the IT, the International Tribunal. Can you give us some background as to where the project kind of started in the first place, and then we can kind of get on that journey as to how all this kind of relates to mass incarceration?
Actually, the International Tribunal is a project that's stemming from the In the Spirit of Mandela Coalition, which I guess how it started about maybe two and a half years ago, actually. And that was called for as an idea coming from Jalil Muftakeen, a recently released political prisoner and co-founder of the National Jericho Movement. And so we started this coalition, and the purpose was to try to get attention and assistance to freeing political prisoners held in the United States. And so we dealt with a lot of things, contacting the International Commission of Jurists, try to get them to revisit not just Sundiata Kole and Ed Poindexter, who they had done back in 1971 or something like that. But the whole point was to draw international attention and national attention toward who the political prisoners in the United States are and campaigns to free them. So then we came up with the idea of having a tribunal, and there's a lot to be said with that. So just in real brief, it's just some unique characteristics about this tribunal in the sense that it's calling for a mass organization around it. It is over half a year away. So we're building a very strong foundation, and we're bringing six basic charges: racist police killing of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, number one. Number two, hyper-incarcerations of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. Number three is the call to free political prisoners. Number four is environmental racism. And number five is public health, racism in the public health sector, and how it impacts Black and Brown and Indigenous people. And finally, there's a call of genocide, which Al probably can add more to that and the nuances involved with that and why it hasn't been successful and where that's going. But lastly, Adam, unique characteristic about this tribunal is not just the organizing leading up to it, but it's the organizing that it sets the stage for to continue after the tribunal. So it won't be one of those situations where you have an awesome, fantastic, very important program, but there is no vision beyond that. And here we are after a day at the UN or a weekend at the UN that we're left still with what to do next type of thing. So we'll go into perhaps some of those outcomes a little later on in the call, but it's setting the stage for very, very, very serious organizing, and we're very excited about the options and opportunities that it gives for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people and organizations to be involved in this process.
And my role in it is as one of the attorneys. There are a group of attorneys, two of whom are presently drafting indictments, articles of indictment, which will allege violations of both U.S. Laws, international laws, civil rights laws, and constitutional issues. And the indictment will also seek remedies, which, among other things, include, for example, a release of political prisoners, but also ultimately reparations and potentially changes in laws, new laws that need to be passed. And the findings hopefully will be presented to the U.S. Department of Justice, because one element of the indictment will deal with a genocide statute that the United States has adopted as law from a United Nations treaty. And that statute gives the Department of Justice authority to bring criminal actions against any persons or institutions that engage in genocide.
So how can we direct people to either get involved or just to learn more about it as we continue to discuss the project?
Well, like I said, and I appreciate that, Hal, is we're organizing well beyond the event, because a lot of times, and this is only an observation, both of us has been around a long time, Hal probably longer than I have. Not to say you're older, Hal, sorry about that, call you out like that. But you know, one thing that the coalition sees, that the Spirit of Mandela Coalition has seen, is that a lot of the programs, important in as they are, they hold a tremendous educational value. But now we're talking about strategies to actually move us forward to get some resolution, some resolve, and something that we can track, monitor, and evaluate. A process that will allow for other organizations and people to come out of their traditional silos that they're in and really to build upon the shoulders of all the phenomenal work that has went on before us, you know, and to involve people in this process, be transparent about it, take their ideas and their tactics, and from, you know, this our whole cultural and historical experience, and be able to bring them into October 2021, and then afterwards, after, like Hal said, bring all this information, codify it, get it straight, presented in a uniform and very organized, accurate, fact-checked way. And then that information will be there. But in the process, we would have organized so much of different organizations, because one of the outcomes, Adam, also, along with what Hal has just said, would be to form, by any other name, a People's Senate. We're talking about organizing across all 50 states and First Nation people and major religious organizations to begin to have our own new sophisticated level organizing to address the problems that we experience in the place called the United States of America. This will allow us to have people power. We're organizing people power so that the call, once again, will definitely be and genuinely be all power to the people.
And one of the things that I find fascinating as an attorney is the part of the organization that is gathering the evidence, and that is an academic committee made up of university professors who are gathering the evidence to support the allegations in the indictment. And I feel very comfortable that the quality of the evidence that will be presented will not only be compelling, but I think that it'll be something that can move people beyond the tribunal to action. And one of the hopeful outcomes is, besides all that we've mentioned, is that we're going to be videotaping everything that we do. And hopefully that can be used at the college and high school level as an educational tool for teaching about what is going on and what has gone on historically with indigenous people and people of color in the United States.
So there are quite a few human rights violations that have to be addressed and I guess itemized throughout the process. What are some key ones that people should be paying attention to if they're not already?
Right. Well, earlier Hal spoke about just the, you know, how to bring forward the charge of genocide, you know, which by the way, the lead attorney on the whole initiative, if it wasn't mentioned, I didn't catch it, is attorney Nkechi Taifa, who has done some brilliant work on really putting in perspective the charge of genocide and making that connection internationally as well as nationally. You know, Malcolm X, you know, schooled everybody back in the 60s about the importance of bringing, you know, raising the violations that people, the food, clothing, and shelter, and the police brutality, and exploitation, and racism, and the oppression, all these things, to bring it to an international level, the human rights violations, you know. But how actually put that in another type of perspective as tribunals would go. So that's why he, just to emphasize one of the points that he made, was taking it to the United States Department of Justice, as well as us presenting to the World Court and to the United Nations, because civil rights as a strategy, civil rights violations indeed, of course, but as a strategy to incorporate that into the tribunal itself. I'll give you an example, like two not so good outcomes of examples, but you know, what Malcolm X didn't realize when he made that call, and that we all explorers get so much energy out of, and which we continue to do, which we will continue to do, because it's important to bring into the international community and see our strength there on the international stage. But the international community has not brought the results as we thought up until this particular point. And that's because of the power of the United States and the impotence of the United Nations. And so, but we recognize that that level of struggle has to continue. But also to be able to hook around, as a caveat, lack of a better word, and recharge civil rights violations. And one of the reasons that we'll be doing that through this tribunal, and not just making it an international tribunal as such, but you know, even with the killings of blacks in the streets and brown people, you know, when the police officer is not even charged, but what happens a lot of times, they are charged, found guilty, and have to pay out on the civil rights level. The person's civil rights were violated. And so we're not going to ignore the connection and the nexus between civil rights violations and human rights violations and bring them both to the fore, one going to the international community, the other residing right here in a place called the United States of America.
One of the things that I find remarkable about the, in the spirit of Mandela Tribunal, is the joining together in one organization, both the social action activities, legal activities. And I've seen that work where the legal and the social action has been very effective when working together. For example, with one of my clients, Russell Maroon Schultz, he had been in solitary confinement for 30 years. And during that time, certainly his family and many organizations had appealed to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections and the secretary of that department. Nothing was happening. But once we joined together the legal arm of action, within 9 months of filing our complaint in court, Maroon was released from solitary confinement after 30 years. Remarkable, the combined effect of that.
Yes, indeed, and that's remarkable. And that is the best what has to happen in this day and time that we're in. Exactly what Hal just said. You know, it can't be a political strategy isolated and separate from any legal strategy, and the legal strategy is separated and not paying heed to any political movement that's resolving around a particular individual, but to really sit down and have the courage and the respect, you know, of each strategy to be able to see how it can be worked together to actually liberate a prison, you know, to actually liberate a prison. But, and this is very important now because, you know, the emotions and energies that's in a lot of the political movements, but those movements themselves, you know, and this is being very candid and honest, do not have the strength when it comes to political prisoners at this time. They're building, yes, again, after going through decades of non-involvement and people not even knowing or mentioning or uttering out of their mouth the words free all political prisoners. So that movement itself, you know, needs to continue to build momentum. That's the very mission of the National Jericho Movement itself and all of its chapters, by the way. But what Hal is saying, you know, that movement, those movements that are on the streets right now, we need to be connected, lockstep, you know, with legal strategies that's going to not only bring prisoners home, but also be able to address effectively those conditions that our freedom fighters have fought against that have very well resulted in them being in prison now for decades. All the food, water, and clothing and human rights issues that we see continuing to exist today from the days of the Black Panther Party and beyond and before that, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Here we are, you know, in April 2021, addressing police violence in this brutal form. And so hopefully this tribunal will have the vision to be able to take us in an organized way to a total, complete, and effective new level.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Jihad Abdul-Mumit and Hal Engel talking about the In the Spirit of the Mandela International Tribunal, talking about U.S. human rights violations and this tribunal that will be happening in October. Can you mention how people can check it out or get in touch or either plug in with their organization, find it online, and also what is the tribunal going to be looking like as far as the structure of it for people who maybe don't even know what tribunal kind of means exactly, what's the actual nuts and bolts behind the scenes?
Well, the tribunal is for the weekend of the 22nd, 30th, 23rd, and 24th of October this year, prior to the coronavirus is scheduled to be in New York City to be announced. But as the coronavirus ravaged its way through the population in the world, actually a lot of those things became precarious in terms of actually scoring a date a year and a half away when people were dying like flies. But one thing, it offered another opportunity, which we've totally seized upon, and how I can elaborate on it is just, he already mentioned that's going to be live streamed around the world. And even we have 13 jurists, it's a 3-day trial. It's not an adversarial component to it, but it is a legal component to it, as Hal said. We're setting the stage for future litigation immediately thereafter. So it's a very sober, a very serious 3 days of interviewing witnesses. There's no speeches. There's no big celebrities giving speeches or activists giving any speeches. This is a team of attorneys, Hal Engel, part of that, and led by Nkechi Taifa, that's going to be asking impacted witnesses, expert witnesses on all of the charges that we are talking about, collecting the information, fact-checking it, putting it under some type of scrutiny, interrogation of it within itself, and coming up with the verdict from the 13 jurists that we're going to have. About half of them will be from overseas. The virtual, because of the coronavirus, now we see how much stuff is accepted and done today virtually, so it may save us some airplane tickets there if you don't have to actually get to New York. But it's this three-day affair, 13 jurists, and the fourth day, that Monday, the verdict will be read publicly under the shadow of the United Nations.
And the presentation will not be in the nature of just talking heads. We're going to have as much evidence that can be presented either by video or photos, or if necessary, documents showing the violations that have occurred and are still occurring. But the idea is to both educate and activate the public as well as hopefully the judicial system.
And so you had asked also, Adam, how can you make the connection? Well, we meet this general public meetings the third Saturday of every month from 12 to 2 Eastern Standard Time. You can access that information by either emailing spiritofmandela1@gmail.com, spiritofmandela1@gmail.com, or you can go to the website spiritofmandela.org. spiritofmandela.org. There, we'll be asking you to endorse the tribunal, $25 to endorse the tribunal. There is a budget to this. And the reason why, listeners, that there is a budget, attorneys are generously giving their time, their energy, their brain power, and their resources, and their acumen, and then everything, their brilliance to this initiative leading up to this. But after it's over, you know, this is not a freebie. We have to pay for venues to have regional conferences and establishing a people's senate. We're going to have to pay attorneys fairly pay attorneys to be able to move these issues forward. And so this money is not being pocketed by anyone, but it's also to bring people in, witnesses in, jurists in from overseas, if that's the case, or from other parts of the country that's important for to hear their testimony, if in fact it's going to be physical, paying for the venue, housing people, lodging people. I know I'm saying a lot, but we want to be upfront with where the money and how the money's being used. So when we say endorse this tribunal for $25 or more, you can also put an ad in the program agenda booklet. All this information can be accessed on our website, spiritofmandela.org. And you can email us at spiritofmandela1@gmail.com if you want your to receive an email for a Zoom invitation to be part of the general meetings every Saturday. And finally, you know, in the process of you listening to all of this, you can join in any one of the committees. We have a lot of committees dealing with social media and finance and outreach and public affairs and the legal team. If you're an attorney listening to this, you can reach out to Hal himself or myself at that same email. He will get that information. If you want to be involved, Luke, we would definitely appreciate that.
As far as all the different kind of things that you're looking into and making the case for current human rights violations, the prison industrial complex is another striking example. Can you just say more about kind of how that relates to the ongoing work with the tribunal, above and beyond, like you said, after the tribunal takes off and people are still maybe not even, you know, thinking about concepts that aren't new, which is talking about things like abolition, right? And how now kind of the national mindset is kind of bending a little bit now, and so much attention in the last year or so around Black Lives Matter and why that's important.
Yes, indeed. If I catch your question, the beginning part of the question, I didn't quite catch that. But if you're talking about the day after, so to speak, the tribunal, where that's going, you want me to elaborate a little on that? Was that what you said, Adam? I missed the very part.
Just kind of covering with so many things that you have to talk about for the tribunal, that mass incarceration being a striking feature and what that means around how people kind of can be thinking about this differently and will be thinking about it differently.
Right. Well, this is, you know, this tribunal has a fantastic vision about itself. It's not an overnight fix because there's so many wonderful people and organizations on the ground dealing more direct, immediate issues happening in prison, release aging prisons. RAP is doing an excellent job of that, release aging people in prison. And so much good work is being done. Abolitionist, the Anarchist Black Cross, the Abolitionist Law Center. There's many good outfits that are working now, along with Jericho, to address different issues, all the way from political prisoners to mass incarcerations, or we say hyper incarcerations, that is doing that work. That's fine, that needs to continue. But this tribunal brings all that work into a center focus, along with the organizing that goes behind it. We reach a certain point, as Hal said, that information will be vetted, cross-examined, interrogated, and fact-checked so that it can be codified as if it hasn't been. But to bring it all in one space, you know, so that when the other initiatives that launched after that, the organizing that went into that, the foundation would have been there. And this is key because, I mean, just query yourself, I'm talking to the listeners of this program, how many programs that you may have been a part of, how many webinars, how many fantastic programs, actually. And then when that program is actually over with, there you go, the program is over with. And so, but I just want to say that this is trying to capture all that energy that leads up into a program so that we'll have a viable mechanism to feed it off into people across all 50 states.
And to reiterate to some extent, what we're seeking as a remedy in an indictment or legal document, when you're seeking action by a court, you have a remedy part at the end of the legal document. And this remedy will call for changes in statutes that need to be changed, new laws that need to be enacted. And also, as I mentioned, we believe that the evidence will show that there are and have been violations of the statute that the United States adopted from the United Nations that show criminal violations, and that the United States should bring those criminal actions against those institutions and individuals to complete part of that remedy. But I will just add, this is something that, as an attorney, I cannot bring. No private attorney can bring that criminal action. It's got to be brought by the United States government through the Department of Justice.
And once again, you see the whole nexus and connection between political activism and political movements. And as Hal's expressing now, being an attorney himself, you know, the importance of having that grounded in a legal strategy that's actually connected with the movements. And so this, I can express this more emphatically than what we're doing at this moment, but it's very important, and this is what this tribunal seeks to do. And once again, for those that are listening, it is an invitation, an open, transparent invitation for you to become directly involved, particularly at this ground level, if you will, even though we've been working on it for a while, to be involved in the committees, have your organizations and those that you represent to become involved, so that after it's over, we can be seriously talking about some people's power based upon this fact-check initiative that's going to have its legal implications and trajectories, as well as its political trajectories. And that trajectory will involve people across all 50 states. You know, there's 30 million people in the United States, correct me if I'm wrong. And it's a big country, and there's so many different interests and strategies, but you'd be surprised how many of them are connected with each other. It's just not the communication is not there. So this tribunal attempts to begin to weave that communication and bring these efforts together. It's going to take time in a more organized way. We're not talking about a third party as such or anything of running people vote, because there are many organizations that are doing that and grooming and educating people and candidates to run for office that really represent the people. I was just on a wonderful call with the Black is Back Coalition, and there's many organizations that are grooming people with their 19 points of self-determination there. What the tribunal seeks to do is just to organize people and their strengths together so there can be a unified voice behind whatever righteous initiative or candidate or person or other or action that needs to be taken. And in this climate there that we see now, particularly January 6th, we've seen how reactionary and explosive things can become with the mainstream society, mainstream liberal society, and mainstream reactionary society, for lack of a better way. Somebody else may be able to break it down better than that. But the old proverb is this: when two horses fight, the grass underneath suffers, gets trampled. And the masses of people, that old word, the masses of people will get trampled. And so we're trying to see that vision and organize ourselves in a more stalwart, robust way, be politically astute, and be ready in our own community. So when you talk about hyper-incarceration, mass incarcerations, Adam, we can, you know, address the development of our own communities through these initiatives. The tribunal, we're not just going to talk about the goose and don't talk about the gander, as Malcolm says. So we're charging the government with these things, but our strategy involves building our own communities so that we can, for example, stop brutalizing and abusing our women, our mothers, our sisters and daughters, so that we can stop shooting each other on street corners and blaming it on the rain. You know, so this tribunal politically sets the stage for us to become more organized, to be able to deal with our own in-house matters, and at the same time, be able to nail down and stop the oppression from the state government. So,
and that is inthespiritofmandela.org. Check it out. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Big thanks to our guests and Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for editing and production. Free them all. Adam here from Prison Pipeline, asking you to donate now to community-supported radio KBOO 90.7 FM. You can donate right now at kboo.fm/give. You can't be at the station to take your donation by phone, so support us online. Check out the KBOO mobile app, and you can snail mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please urge your friends and family members to keep us on the air. If you want to hear my sultry pipes on Prison Pipeline, please donate now, and I can promise
KBOO Portland. Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. Find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. One out of every seven humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share